What I've come to notice is that the more I let go, the better the drawing. When I just completely, like, you know, be in that moment and not really care about any kind of outcome, those are always the best drawings. Grab your coat and get your hat. Leave your worries on the doorstep. Grab your coat and get your hat.
Sunny side of the street. Hello, welcome back to My Favorite Spot, the Drawing Your Own Path podcast. You just heard a wild, repeating, mirrored version of our theme song, On the Sunny Side of the Street, put together by a group called Shaza Laka Zoo and remixed by another group called Jazzatron. I have no idea who did what. I really just look it up on YouTube. You'll find all of it there. It kind of mirrors our guest today, Donna Mickelson, a Hudson Valley artist who I discovered here in Sugarloaf, who had a show at the Milkweed Gallery, and then she did a performance, and it was really engaging, beautiful performance. And I think the performance has as much to do with the work as anything. She's an ambidextrous artist, or an ambi artist, as she says. And she draws simultaneously with both hands. And these beautiful mirrored forms come out. Some are mandala-like, some are figures. It's a really great range. And she's a voracious practitioner, always on Instagram, not just with her still images, but also showing her in the process of drawing. And you'll see how her practice came out of her past doing dance. And so the movement and the performance is also part of the work. And besides these drawings that come out, these sort of symmetrical, mirrored, two-handed, simultaneously made drawings, she does a lot of teaching. And one of the things that takes place in her workshop are that the people draw sort of across from one another and mirror the work of the one mirrors the work of the other. And the kind of rapport that's built up in the sharing that drawing space is really, really interesting and something that I'm looking forward to trying with groups. So I'm sure you're really going to enjoy hearing from Donna Mickelson. And if you enjoy this podcast, there's a few things you can do. Mirror your fingers onto the keyboard and go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. That helps other people discover the podcast. Also, you can go to Amazon and give Drawing Your Own Path a high rating or a nice review there if you enjoy the book. And if you want to find out about more activities in the community and in the contemplative arts drawing space, go to Facebook. It's the best way if you're still on Facebook, and join our private group called Drawing Your Own Path. Not the Drawing Your Own Path page for the book, but there's actually a group called Drawing Your Own Path that you can ask to join, and you'll see all of the activities that we do posted there. We're also on Google Plus in Drawing Your Own Path, and on Instagram you can follow Drawing Your Own Path. And if you want to see my own work, my own daily drawing work, some of it goes out onto Facebook and Instagram, but the core of it, along with my writing, takes place on a website called iclock.com, iclock.com. And there's also an email subscription list if you're interested there. And that's where the real heart of my daily practice is, if you want to see my everyday drawing work. So enough of all that. We have a lot to talk about with Donna Mickelson, which I know you'll enjoy. And thank you again for listening to the podcast. To the sunny, sunny, sunny side of the street, just direct your feet. To the sunny side of the street. Deep, baby, over the tirada. So we're here today on the Drawing Your Own Path podcast, speaking with Donna Mickelson, a Hudson Valley artist.
Yes, I live in Beacon.
You grew up in Brooklyn, though, is that right?
Yes.
So you're New York.
Bensonhurst, Brooklyn.
Okay, so you're hardcore.
I'm a real New Yorker.
New York City.
Yep.
Up in Beacon, like many of us, have come upstate for various reasons. And Beacon was a sleepy town until the Dia Art Center
took over a factory, an old factory, and made a art center there.
I moved up in 2012. I was running a school that I founded in Westchester. I did that for about 12 years. And when we decided to close the school, I was like, what am I doing here? I miss city life, and Beacon just was so attractive, and I loved the galleries here, and it was cheaper at the time. And we just kind of took a leap, and really, I have to say, since moving here, my journey as an artist, really, I like to say I kind of came out as an artist when I moved to Beacon.
Beautiful. Yeah, so yeah. I want to cover, because I met you around an exhibition that you did here in Sugarloaf at the Milkweed Gallery.
Yes.
And
mm-hmm.
I loved the exhibition, but when I went to your performance there, I was really moved by that. I thought that your engagement with the work and the audience really gave such a great dimension to what you do. So
thank you.
Yeah, let's just kind of cover what you do. You call yourself an ambi artist. Do you want to tell us about that?
So I've been exploring ambidexterity since I'm a kid. I used to drive my mother crazy. I used to have to do everything with my right hand and my left hand. So, and I have these memories of like practicing, bouncing a ball, like, okay, 100 on the left, 100 on the right.
Wow.
Like I would train myself. I was really into it. And I think I liked it because it settled my brain. And it gave me something to focus on. And I just had, you know, it brought me a lot of joy, actually. I love feeling the balance in the body. And it kind of translated as I got older and I was in art school. And actually, on my own, I was like, oh, why don't I try drawing with two pens? And the minute I did it, I swear something clicked in my brain and I haven't stopped since. So it's been like over 25 years.
Wow. And what do you think that was, clicking?
It's a really good question because it's a really strange story. I'm still exploring how the brain works because it was almost like I was studying numerology. I was really into all things esoteric at the time. I was just really searching. I was 19 years old, living in New York City. I was going to Parsons, surrounded by all this art and also the sadness of New York City. I was not happy. I wanted to be in the woods. I remember it was around New Year's, and I was sitting in my dorm room, and I just had this moment, and it was when I picked up the two pens, I started to do these ambidextrous drawings, and I started to write backwards. And then I discovered, oh, wow, this is really easy. It wasn't like I had to train myself to do it. It was like my mind kind of did a little flip, and it was like, boom. And I was like, okay, let's try it left-handed. Let's try it this way. And I was doing backwards, upside down, and I was kind of like, just kind of, I don't know how to describe it. Like, I was just surprised at my own brain. I was like, how am I doing this? It didn't, you know, it was kind of like magical.
Right.
in a way, you know, I was like, this is kind of magic.
It's like, something you knew how to do, but you didn't know you knew how to do it.
Well, it was like, since my right side knew how to do it, like, all it needed to do was flip it around and give the information to the left side. So it was like this kind of communication happening in my body. And
is there a physical sensation associated with that?
Yes, definitely.
What's that
definitely.
Like?
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's that kind of, it's a really good question. It's a very balancing feeling, and it's also at the same time like I don't know how to put words to it. There is this kind of moment, and I think I do it because I try as much as I can to extend that moment when everything kind of converges, I call it spontaneous symmetry, because there is no conscious thought. It's something's just happening, and it's so in the moment. And I think every time I go, and that's why for me I call it a meditation, because every time I go to draw, when I go to my board, I'm searching for that moment. You know
what I'm
saying?
Beautiful. Yeah, yeah. Sure. Mm-hmm. And your drawings are really full body engaged. They're not tiny little miniatures. You're really extending your arms, extending your whole body and moving with it.
Yes, because I'm a mover.
Right.
I was a dancer in high school. I fell in love with Marcia Graham, and just moving became a huge part of my life. It always was, but dance was like, wow, I found something that I really loved. So this kind of gives me the best of both worlds, where I can move and draw.
It's like dancing with a trace.
Symmetrical.
Yeah.
Sorry?
It's like dancing with a trace.
Yeah. Well, because I that's why it's kind of like a visual and moving meditation, because not everybody can sit still and meditate. I certainly am not one of those people. I recently took up trail running, and what I really love about it is it is very similar in that it can be a moving meditation if you, you know, think about it.
Sure.
Put your mind to it, and you know, I can really focus on my breath and, you know, being in tune with the trail. It's really awesome. And I think with the I'm just that type of person where I need to move. I think better when I move. Life is just better when I move.
All right. I get
so
that,
like,
but somehow that physical engagement puts you in a state of mind, a kind of a calm, clear,
exactly,
concentrated state of mind.
Well, and it's the combination. This is where, you know, I mean, after doing this for 25 years plus, I have studied the two sides of the brain and what each side is doing. And it's interesting because when I go to draw, the left side of the brain is focusing on my fine motor coordination, gross motor coordination. I usually set up some kind of rule for myself. So, for example, most of the time I don't pick up my chalk or pens or whatever I'm using from the drawing until it's done. So, and in that way,
you're saying you keep the tool that you're drawing with in contact with the paper without lifting it for the whole drawing.
Exactly. So my chalk is in contact with the wall for the whole drawing. And in that way, it's like I'm trying to, it's a sentence, you know, or it's a statement, or it's a moment. It's a capturing moment without any interruption. So that's like one kind of rule that I've been doing that for a while. But sometimes I'll say, okay, I'll just start at the top and work my way down. And I'll do like a whole series of drawings like that. And so my left brain is like satisfied. It's like, okay, I need to stay coordinated. I have some limitations to work within. And then the right side of the brain is in the spontaneity of it. So I never know what the drawing is going to come out like. Does that make sense?
I think that's really, really important that you start out not knowing what the result is going to be.
Yes.
I think that's so important, because then the drawing becomes a kind of discovery as opposed to a task, and you're not comparing it to what you think it should be. In fact, you're allowing for whatever it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes patterns emerge. Like I'll do a series and once I get into it, I could honestly draw all day. I just did a big mural in Beacon. It's a 92-foot long. I think it's the largest piece I ever did.
And you can see many pictures on Donna's Instagram. I watched the whole thing develop over the weekend as it was being made, and it's quite beautiful.
Thank you. It's DonnaMickelson.art at Instagram, and my website is ambiarts.net, and you can see some video as well. That was a process. I mean, it was like over 90 degrees, and I was out there for 10 hours. And honestly, it didn't feel like 10 hours because I was just in the state, you know, and each figure I drew, you know, was its own unique process. I had kind of a concept of what I thought the mural could look like, but I didn't know until I did it. How it came out, and I was really happy with it. But it was kind of like I was in a state, you know?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Deep into it, it seemed like, and working quite steadily, even in the heat.
It was crazy. It's like the heat didn't exist. Nothing else existed. It was just the wall, you know?
It was one of those physical trials kind of meditations, like walks in the desert. You're but like those, in the sun drawing.
Yes. Well, and those figures that kind of appear, because they're kind of like these beings, I call them Andy beings, they kind of evolved out of a process of many, many, many drawings. And all of the little beings are also, you know, there's only one, I never lose contact with the wall. I start out with chalk drawings and then I painted over them. So I've had kind of, there are some kind of figures and symbols that have appeared out of my drawings through like a series. Sometimes they're human, sometimes they look like, right now I'm working on a piece that is a phoenix.
Oh, yeah.
And it's, I've been drawing to music, and that's been really, really enjoyable. Kind of picking up the lyrics or the rhythm, and kind of just letting the line kind of tell a story.
Yeah, terrific.
So those videos I post also on Instagram, and I record them because they're on chalkboard, so they're going to disappear and I'll never see them again. So I record them so that I could, you know, study them myself, and it's fun to share. And
So it's a performance piece in a sense, but there's some recording of it. Yeah. And then you're doing them in chalk, so they have that beautiful wispy edges to it. And the sound. Yeah. And then you're washing them away.
Yeah, so they're ephemeral.
It reminds me of that. There's the boards that you can buy. They sell under Zen Arts supplies usually, where you use a paintbrush and water and you draw on it, and then it sort of fades.
Yes.
It's a similar thing. But I do lots of drawing at the beach in the sand, right at the water's edge, and I'll make a drawing, and then within a minute that's washed away, and then I'll draw another, and I could be there all day doing those drawings.
There's something about it. There's something about I know for me, sometimes it's like, it helps to kind of, I always used to freak out with materials because they're so expensive. And it would always almost like, sometimes it would stifle me. I'd be like, oh my God, what if I make a mistake? You know, and sometimes it happens to artists. You know, you go to do something and you're just afraid. And it kind of removes that kind of fear. It's like, all right, I'm just going to do it.
Exactly.
And if I don't like it, I'll erase it.
It doesn't cost anything. No one will see it. It's practice. Yeah.
It's between me and me. And usually what I've come to notice is that the more I let go, the better the drawing. When I just completely, like, you know, be in that moment and not really care about any kind of outcome, those are always the best drawings.
Yeah, that's amazing. I think that's really amazing. Yeah. So all the way back into to where you were talking about the brain flip, I had thought about, I just recently read the biography, the Walter Isaacson biography of Leonardo. And he was heavily, you know, he was left-handed. Actually, he was sort of ambidextrous, but he wrote with his left hand, and he spontaneously wrote backwards.
Yes.
And lots of people felt like it was some kind of code, but that was just the way that he was more comfortable. You're saying that all of a sudden you could write backwards and you didn't have to think about it.
Yeah, exactly. And I loved it because when I was on the subway, I spent a lot of time in the subway, I could write in my journal and no one could peek at what I was doing.
Oh, that's clever.
You know, my 19-year-old mind was like, oh, it'll be a little secret.
But you could write it and you could read it equally well.
Yes. From that exploration of writing backwards, I developed what I call word alchemy, which is kind of like a writing meditation process that I started a few years ago. And it kind of has evolved. And it's interesting because you mentioned Leonardo da Vinci, and a few months ago, no, sorry, it was maybe 6 months ago, I was exploring how to use kind of you know, these large boards that I've been using to teach handwriting to kids, because I taught preschool for many years, and I love literacy, and I love teaching kids how to read and write. It's so exciting. And when I had my school, we had used the method called Handwriting Without Tears, and it was a beautifully developed model of teaching handwriting. So I kind of used their, I guess, font as I was drawing the letters really big on my board. And because I didn't want to erase every letter, I just kind of layered the letters on top of them. And what I started to notice as I layered them is these kind of patterns appeared. So I did A through Z, and then I did Z through A going in the other direction. So I went forwards and backwards. Turns out to be this really cool sacred geometry shapes. I was like, wow, you know, 8-pointed stars, and I overlaid the Kabbalah symbol on top of it, and these points line up. It's just so cool, and I'm like, wow, that's the alphabet. And so for me, there's magic in the alphabet, and the word alchemy, I would take like a saying. I'm sorry, I'm rambling on.
I love where it's going. It just shows all the connections that you're making and things that put together. It does, but the thing you said, which I think ties it together, is this just seems to be some kind of magic in the spontaneity of these images appearing. There just seems to be something that it's very hard for us to explain, or maybe we make an explanation, but it's not the whole thing. And we look in all these areas. I did exactly the same. In the tarot and alchemy and magic and psychology and Carl Jung and in science and neuroscience and the brain, just to try and get some handle on this thing that's emerging, that's speaking to us.
Right. Because it's a good feeling. I think it has certain endorphins. It's good. It's just why wouldn't you want to feel that wonderful, in that wonderful place?
That's a great thing to say. I think that's true.
Joy.
Yeah, no, it's true, and I think it's an interesting observation that there may be brain chemistry, right, to encourage us to do it, which I think is kind of interesting. I never thought of that before.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about one more thing about the brain flipping. When you're in the state, when you're in the simultaneous hand, spontaneous symmetry drawing state, are you aware of both the physicality and being able to watch the whole drawing evolve at the same time?
You know, it kind of, what I've noticed is it's a range, and it really depends on what I choose to focus on and, you know, just where I'm at. Sometimes it's super physical. Sometimes I close my eyes. I'm not even looking at the drawing, and I'm just really focusing on my body symmetry and muscles and kind of feeling it. And, it's kind of like a contact, with the wall. It's like an improvisational contact. And then other times it is very visual, and I try really hard to keep my peripheral vision engaged, because I find that it helps create the most symmetry and that state, that I'm looking for. Like when I break my focus, I find I lose that state.
Yeah, there's a teacher, meditation teacher, John Yates, who's also known as Chuladasa, who wrote a book called The Mind Illuminated. I don't know if you've read that, but a lot of people who listen may have read that. And what he describes, kind of what you're describing as a meditative state, where you're balancing attention and peripheral awareness. And so it's really, really interesting that you've come across that, through practice, just through your own practice.
Yes.
Discovered and cultivated and continue to cultivate that balanced state. So I think that's really interesting.
Because I was a teacher, I developed the practice for kids. So I did it all throughout my 12 years of running the school and teaching. So I worked with hundreds of kids, teaching them how to draw ambidextrously. I call them ambidoodles. And I do workshops now. So I go into schools, or I work with businesses and or board development meetings, and we do drawing meditation workshops or collaborative symmetry workshops, which is people drawing together. I found that it's it is kind of a method in a way.
Oh, sure.
That I'm, still
no, absolutely.
And developing, but
because the drawing, this sort of spontaneous arising of these images is kind of really so incredible. I'm wondering about particular images that have appeared for you and that have been persistent, and things that you've seen that come up. I know you do these; they're basically like human forms. But I wonder if you can elaborate on some of those and talk about what becomes persistent in that process and what you think those messages are getting through are.
Oh, it's a great question. I'm not very conscious when I'm drawing, so when these images appear, I'm like, oh, oftentimes I step back and I'm going, whoa, okay, cool. For my first year living in Beacon, and I was fortunate that I had a big space, that like an extra room in the house that I could use to draw. So I had a big giant wall, and I love drawing big, always have. So I did this 8-foot tall figure who I refer to as the Ambi Warrior. And she's pretty fierce looking. And I feel like she was like the first mother to all the little figures that are on the mural right now and a lot of the figures that I do. Because I think she kind of anchored for me almost like she was like, girl, you're going to need some strength, because I was in for quite a few years that followed the birth of her. And my drawing really has been my guide and my, I feel like my when I draw, it kind of leads me to where I need to go. And I've used it often as a tool for healing. So one of the things that happened to me is I've been suffering with chronic Lyme disease for many years. And it got really, really bad. So I was really sick. I was in bed, curled up in a ball, kind of sick. And I was doing all kinds of treatments. And it was really, really rough ride. So I decided to draw, I wanted to draw my pain. I decided, like, and I really feel like that warrior was with me, because I was like, okay, I'm going to face this pain head on, because pain is a really intense teacher, I think, in life in general. And I was like, all right, bring it. I was kind of just at that place in my life where I was like, I'm not going to try to escape it. So I'm going to take it on. I'm going to, and so by kind of trying to draw, and I did these full body, they're really ugly. They're hideous looking drawings, but they're my favorites, of course. but I really tried to draw out like what I was feeling, what my body was feeling, under attack. And I did this whole series of drawings, and out of that kind of emerged, it kind of was a huge clearing for me. And I remember, like, it was over the course of the few months of doing this process, what kind of drawings emerged after were really beautiful and full of vibrancy, and something had changed in me. I was like, okay, I can alter. How to put this? I used my drawing as a meditative tool to attract the energy that I needed to heal myself, because all the treatments I was doing was not healing. I almost lost my gallbladder, it was horrible. And I was like, okay, I got to do something here.
How much were you drawing in those days?
A lot, every day.
Every day for a couple of hours?
Almost every day. It would depend. Maybe not every day. Let's say like 5 days a week. And I would draw if I had a session, usually it's like 2 to 3 hours. Because once I get into it, I get into it. I mean, I could draw. Yesterday I was drawing for, I don't even know. Every time I had a free minute, I was like, oh, I'll have another one.
Yeah, it's amazing. When you're in good health, there's a kind of energy that moves through you, and it just seems to be like breathing. Like the energy comes and you make the drawing and out it goes, and it just feels, you aren't diminished in any way by that movement, and you're enriched more. And then there's this new thing in the world. But your description there of the pain, it seemed like that wasn't that sort of joyous, spontaneous energy. It was there was some other kind of energy that needed to move, and you were able to get in touch with that and try to give it space or give it room and let it move out of you.
Yeah. So the drawing, you know, it became like a tool. And it's interesting because I came across this saying, do you know, you're familiar with Joseph Campbell?
Sure.
Power of Myth?
Yeah, yeah.
So this beautiful saying, find a place where there is joy and the joy will burn out the pain. And I did like a word alchemy, word meditation, and I painted it like a... probably like a 6 by 5 painting. It's pretty large. And
6 feet by 5 feet.
6 feet by 5 feet.
And you use the letters of that statement?
So I would write that statement each layer, and I would sometimes write it in a spiral or it would be backwards. And as I'm writing, I'm listening to Joseph Campbell. I'm, you know, really kind of getting immersed in, what does that really mean? What does it really mean to find your joy? And how does that burn out the pain? Like, what does it really mean? So, like, meditating on that, it was probably like a month long I did that painting. And I knew it was finished because the design was right. And I was like, okay, it's done, you know.
Beautiful. And what does it mean to find your joy?
Well, I mean, for me, I started to think, okay, right now, what brings me joy was my drawing. I mean, lots of things in my life bring me joy, but what kind of connects me to Donna? You know, what do I do that's just me? You know, this is something that nobody taught me how to do. I just do it because I love it and I feel pushed to do it. Like something in me is like, I gotta do it.
How does that feeling get embodied for you?
I don't know. It's like, I feel like it's something that is kind of a driving force.
But is it in your head? Is it in your arms? Is it in your chest?
I feel it in my chest.
Yeah.
I definitely feel it in my chest. I feel it in my heart. I feel it like in my solar plexus. Like it's something that kind of, and I feel whatever that driving force is, it's like, okay, well, if I give that life, it gives me energy. That joy actually is energizing. Sometimes I'll get up and I'll have a session and it'll change my whole day. I'm like, okay, I'm ready now.
What does it feel like when the pain is being burned out?
What does it feel like?
Yeah, I mean, you said if you get in touch with your joy, it'll drive out the pain or burn out the pain. How did you experience that?
My experience has been quite, and that's where it's like kind of weird. It's like, is it magic? I don't know, because it's kind of instantaneous. Like, I don't know if you've ever had a situation where suddenly your energy just switches, you know, and sometimes it could be, oh, you just got, like, let's say you just got some bad news and you're happy, happy, happy. And then suddenly someone says something to you and then boom, your whole energy changes and suddenly you're in a stress or whatever. It's almost like the opposite happens. It's like all of a sudden you're walloped with some joy and so happy, and it's like, oh wow, I feel a whole lot better. Or when you have a great conversation with a friend and you walk away and you're like, I feel so much better now. You know, it's kind of that, it's energy.
How important do you think it is that because we're drawing, we're manifesting it out into the world, and then it gets in a physical form, it has some permanence, it has some persistence, and then it goes back into our eyes, and then we realize we've done that, and we see it for the first time. That sort of feedback, how important is that?
Well, I kind of go back to my experience with the authentic movement. If you've ever done authentic movement, it's a wonderful kind of moving type of meditation process, I think, really. And part of the process is you have a witness. So usually if it's a group, half the group will move and each person, you know, partners with someone and the other person just watches with no judgment. They're just observing you and they're also observing themselves. So for me, when I step back, I kind of try to be that witness almost for myself. So I look I try to look objectively. I try to look and see, okay, how is this making me feel? And that's a lot of times why I record it, because I find it interesting, because I'm never aware of what I'm doing. So to rewind and kind of look back and go, oh, that's what was happening. Okay. You know, I find it a useful tool for sure.
Yeah, that's terrific.
But that's kind of, yeah.
Yeah, I love the idea of the witness and also the connection to Authentic Movement and the recording that you do now, and the fact that you did performance in the gallery when I saw you. I think it draws a great connection for me. Yeah, I'm a big believer that having made it in the world and having it witnessed, having some observer see it, it makes a big difference in doing it. Not just, of course, I love sitting meditation, but it's easy to get caught up in your own thoughts in that. And when I draw it out on the page, I see all that. It's all exposed to me.
Yes. Well, it's interesting because, you know, in a way we all do, when you doodle, I really believe when you do, it's like the start of that's a little mini drawing meditation.
Absolutely.
When people start to doodle. And so I love doodling. I was going to say something about the witnessing and performing. What I love about performing is that, you know, the drawings are cool when you see them, but watching them get created, many people have said, oh, when I watch you, it's kind of, I get into the state too. So it's transferable. You know, people are witnessing and also having an experience, as I'm drawing. So yeah. I'm having the experience and the audience is having an experience. They're different, but it's still an experience.
Sure. It's the reason we sometimes like to go to theater or write a performance because the energy that creates. So yeah, let's talk about working with others, because I know you have all this individual practice, and I think that's really the core and the strength of what you do, is that you do practice every day and you are in touch with that all the time, and that is driving you. But you're also very articulate and generous about sharing that and trying to bring others into it. So talk about the kind of workshops and things that you do.
Yeah, I think I can't help. As much as I love art, I also love education and I love teaching. Because how the journey started was teaching preschoolers. I taught preschoolers for many years. And I had already been exploring, you know, my ambidextrous drawing for many years. And so, of course, when the kids started to pick up pens and pencils and markers, I would give them both hands. And I started to develop it as part of the curriculum, as part of like an early literacy, learning how to draw and read and write.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. And we should also say that in the images I see, it's not just an individual kid doing ambidextrous drawing for themselves, but you have another technique where you draw across from someone. Can you tell us more about that one?
Yes. So I developed what I call collaborative symmetry. Basically, the kids work in pairs and they're mirroring each other. So one person's leading, the other's following. And what's really cool is that, it creates, I mean, first of all, just doing the drawing meditation itself is kind of a state of mindfulness. And when you're drawing with another person, you really have to use your extra senses. It's non-verbal. So kids really have to tune into each other. And leading, some kids find it challenging to lead. Other kids find it challenging to follow. But sometimes when I have enough time with a class, I love to get to the point and it happens. And it always blows me away how it just happens. Well, I'll have them take turns leading, following. And then at some point, I'm like, okay, now no talking. Don't decide who leads, who follows, and just start to draw. And it's amazing how so many times that, you know, the two people drawing will reach kind of a state where they're like, whoa, what just happened? Because they weren't really sure who was leading or who was following. They were just moving in sync.
It's so beautiful. That's kind of an instant rapport.
Yes. And it's just, and I thought, I, you know, because it's, I've done it hundreds and hundreds of times, like I've seen that pattern repeat over and over again. And I was like, that, see, that to me is magic again. But it's magical. It's that there's joy in that moment. And those two people now have had an experience that was really unique, where they were in a state of joy and, you know, happiness. It was fun. And now they, you know, they have an experience that they can bond over, which is really nice for, especially for young kids. So we do drawing in pairs, and I also develop drawing in fours. I call those, well, so the pairs is called quadridoodles, and when they draw in fours, I call them octodoodles, because it's eight hands instead of
right.
Four. And that also has a whole process in itself, which is really, really fun. And, you know, what amazes me about working with people is they approach, a lot of people will say, well, I'm not an artist. You know, so I can't draw. And I'm always like, yes, you can. I'm like, can you doodle? And they're like, yeah. I'm like, do you doodle? Yes, everyone doodles. I'm like, okay, you're good. You know, and what I love about doing this with people is people see, like, okay, you know, you don't have to be an artist, quote unquote, that you can have a really good time and make some really cool art with just kind of letting yourself go and being in the moment and fun.
So you come up with a way like a formality and a structure that takes, first of all, takes attention off people about drawing for sure, which I think is so critical.
Yeah.
And second of all, this sort of can take away the responsibility of what it is you're drawing because it's with someone else, something like that. But you've gotten a way for them to get the movement of that experience, the movement of that energy as well.
Just
in the drawing. But what is it that's really happening when? Because I see the videos of it, and the two people are drawing, and yeah, not one of them is leading, but they're having to feedback so intensely with each other to kind of keep the mirroring going. Like, really, mm-hmm. What is some kind of merger there or something? What do you think's going on?
Usually within the first few drawings, it's you're getting to know the other person. And usually one person will have an easier time leading or following or vice versa or both. And that in itself is a very interesting observation. And I always ask the students to reflect on, you know, what is it and what makes a good leader. We kind of go off on a little tangent, but one of the things we discover is that when you're leading, you actually have to have an awareness of who's of the person following you, because if you lose them, you lose the drawing. You know, you're there to do something collaborative. You might be in the lead, but you're doing this together. And I think that's an important leadership principle.
Beautiful. Yes.
Oh, sorry.
I should be really clear so the everybody's got a marker in each hand, and they're drawing.
Yes.
They're drawing with both hands at the same time. But there's a person right across from them with another piece of paper, sort of right up against theirs. And the goal is mm-hmm. that as you're saying, in one case, one person leads and the other person follows, and so you get a mirror mm-hmm. of it left and right, and you get a mirror of it across the table at the same time.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
It just seems like a brilliant way to entrain and experience a cooperation, nonverbal cooperation.
Exactly.
In a world where we're all about verbal barbs and one-ups and things like that, it's a way to mm-hmm. it's a way to allow that opening to be experienced.
Yes. Yes. Exactly. And having the awareness, I think that's always a very interesting for some kids super challenging. But to have that awareness when you're leading of the other person, as well as leading, and others do it quite naturally, and others find it easier to follow, and some people find it harder to follow. It's a very interesting study, you know, because I've done it with so many people.
Sure.
And
well, what it exposes is really, I mean, so the people's vulnerability, which is what I think makes people more afraid about drawing than whether it'll look like something or not, is to expose that which we're talking about.
Right. Well, one of the ways one of the tools I discovered was whiteboards. So I got a whole bunch of whiteboards cut. So I bring them with my suitcase to the school, and the students get to draw. And, you know, it's kind of like my board. It's ephemeral. It gets erased right away. So there right. isn't that stigma of, oh, my God, it's permanent, you know, and it's going to look good. It's like, no, it's okay. We're going to erase it in 5 seconds. Just, you know, it's about the process. Just be in the moment. So that's fun. And we do usually end up, I will, if I have the class for extended time, we do a final piece, which is really fun. The kids do some really cool stuff.
It's such a great movement because I get it in my own brain because, and I think most people do, that they see their own work and they get that feedback and they get that joy if they've done any drawing. But to see how it works between people is something unique, I think.
It is cool because it creates an experience. And like I said, there is kind of like, it's a little bond. They just did something they never did before and they're in a state that they may have never experienced before and they're doing it with another person. So it becomes kind of a memorable experience. And what I like about it, it's memorable and it's joyful. Like I've never had anyone ever pissed off drawing with both hands ever. Everybody smiles. Always a smile.
Yeah, that is amazing. It's amazing. It's the experience with another person, right? The creative experience, openly in the presence of another person, in collaboration with another person, and yeah, within joy. So that's a winner.
And it's fun. Like I did the whole fourth grade in this school in Mayapak. It was so much fun. I went there 3 weeks in a row. I met with about 100 kids. What was fabulous was that to watch them let go, to watch them, you know, let go of it having to look like something or be like something, and seeing that kid kind of come up and go, wow, I feel like an artist now. Like, I didn't think I could draw, but this is so cool. You know, they kind of, that to me is like, I did something good today.
Yeah. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. So, your own personal artwork, I know you showed it here in Milkweed. Are you showing in other places? Do you have shows coming up?
I am going to be at the Heritage Center in Poughkeepsie in July. I don't have the exact dates yet, but I'll be posting that on my page and Instagram.
I'll put all your links up in the material that goes out with the podcast so people can find it.
Oh, cool. And I'll also be at the wall in Beacon at the mural. We're going to do, I'm there with four other artists who have joined me, and they all did murals. We'll be on second Saturday, July 14th in Beacon. It's 9D right across from Beacon Street. And we'll be doing an opening, and I'll be doing a performance that
night. Terrific.
And I'll also have my table set up so people can come and try out the collaborative symmetry. And I might even, I haven't decided yet, but I think I'll be holding a meditation workshop, a short one for people. They could sign up and it'll be fun outside.
Yeah, no, it sounds amazing. And so we're recording this at the end of June in 2018. But if it persists longer, or people come back after this summer and listen, where can they find you? Where do they find your work?
So my website is ambiarts.net, ambiarts.net. I'm also on Instagram, Donna Mickelson. My spelling of my last name is MIKKELSEN.art. That's on Instagram, DonnaMickelson.art. And I'm pretty active on Instagram.
Yes, very active.
I post a lot, especially when I'm busy.
I love it. And I see them all the time. And every day I just think about that energy moving. And I think how wonderful it is. And so you're available. You do workshops. Your work is available, I'm sure, but you also do workshops and work with groups.
Yes. So my I do have a business, AmbiArts. And, you know, my goal is to reach as many kids as I can with this. I go into schools, take the show on the road, and do collaborative symmetry workshops for elementary through high school. I also do meditation workshops for adults. And I work with businesses, do like board development, team development, It's really fun working with adults.
You can see how the team development, that technique would be so great for team development. I can see it right there. Just because it brings out the people's true nature really to the surface in a nonverbal way, which is often so hard to do.
Yes.
It's terrific. Yes. I think that what you've developed is amazing, and the way that you got to it in such an authentic way, such a personal road to discovery, and the fact that you're now out there really trying to share it and bring other people to that experience is so commendable. So thank you. Thank you for your work, and thank you for being on the podcast today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the conversation. This was fabulous.
To the sunny, sunny, sunny side of the street, just direct your feet. To the sunny side of the street. Think about where they are, over the deep.